Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner in charge of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our conversation this morning is with Jay Waite, Associate Director for Decennial Census, U.S. Census Bureau in the Department of Commerce. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Paul. How are you today?
Great, thanks. And joining us in our conversation is Tom Berlin. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, Jay.
Now, Jay, perhaps we could start by finding out more about the Census Bureau. Could you give us a sense of its purpose, mission, and programs, please?
Well, the Census Bureau is in the Department of Commerce, as you said. The main purpose of the Census Bureau is the conducting of the census once every 10 years. The census has been in existence since 1790, and we conduct the census. The main reason for the conducting of the census is it's used for apportioning the House of Representatives. It is the vehicle by which political power is distributed in the United States.
How do you think about the size of the Census Bureau in terms of its staff and the people? How do you describe it?
Well, the Census Bureau, during non-census periods, is about 11,000 people. That consists of about 4,500 people in the field throughout the country in our regional offices that conduct interviews and surveys, about another 4,500 people in our headquarters in Suitland, Maryland, and about 1,500 people in a processing center we have in Jeffersonville, Indiana. So we're now at census time, during the actual time of the census, we swell up to somewhere on the order of 800,000 people in actually conducting the census.
What are the skills of the 11,000 people? I want to think statisticians recording things. Is that?
Well, the skills are very diverse. In the field itself, the skills are people skills that you would get from a door-to-door surveying organization where they're people skills, getting into houses, talking to people, interviewing, getting information, managing of a field staff, making assignments. Jeffersonville, Indiana is much more of a processing center. They have clerical skills as well as computer programming skills. In our headquarters in Suitland, we have a diversity. We do have a number of statisticians that count things and write things down. We also have a large IT component because in today's world, counting people and counting in the census is a big IT operation. We have fairly large, maybe 400 or 500 people who would be considered mathematical statisticians. And they worry about some of the details of the sampling and the interpretation of the statistics.
Jay, a little bit about your roles and your responsibilities as the Associate Director of the Decennial Census. And tell us a little bit about the activities of your office.
As the Associate Director of the Decennial Census, I'm the chief government person relating to the census. I'm responsible for all of the people, the money, and the processes of the census, which is the largest peacetime activity that the federal government produces and conducts. As the Associate Director, I'm responsible to make sure that the budget is procured, that we've got the right budget, that we have the plan. I endorse the plan and take the plan to the various segments of government to make sure that there's a plan laid out, approved, and funded by the Congress to conduct the census.
I happen to know from our relationship that you've spent your entire career at the census.
That's true.
And if you tell us about the positions that you've held through your career and what the census was like when you first joined, what got you interested in joining the Census Bureau?
I've always been very interested in mathematics. I've been very interested in statistics. I'm a great sports fan, and being a sports fan, you get a lot of interest in statistics. What really got me interested in the Census Bureau was the birth of our second child. As I was in graduate school and trying to keep from starving to death, and my wife announced that we were going to have another child, and so I started looking very hard for a job. The Census Bureau offered me a job as a computer programmer in 1971. So I left my home in northern Utah and traveled back to Washington, D.C., which was quite a change in culture and in climate. And began working there as a computer programmer. In those days, it seemed like the census was a pretty safe place and a good place to work. I have worked in several different venues since then. Although I did work as a computer programmer, I had been trained in mathematical statistics. So a short time after arriving, I got a chance to work in a research program as a mathematical statistician, which I did for several years. I've had several other jobs in the Census Bureau. My current job, I took over as chief operating officer of the census in 2000. I started there in 1997, and I was in charge of all census operations. And then in 2001, I took over as the associate director, which is the senior director on the executive staff at the Census Bureau for the census.
1971, that's a while.
It is a while.
There must have been some pretty dramatic changes in technology and techniques over that period.
Huge changes. Since we're talking to you from IBM, one of the big changes I think about is that I came as a computer programmer, as I said. Our computer programming at that time, we used to write code on a Fortran worksheet. We'd take it to a separate staff who would key it up on a punch card, who would then, that punch card would be transferred to a small 2A tape, which they would update, even reassemble programs. We're all done on a big mainframe with these steel tapes. And you would maybe 2 or 3 days later, you would get back your code indicating that you'd left a comma out or you'd left the period out. You compare that with today when we sort of, everybody has a computer on their desk and we don't think anything at all about sort of on-the-spot editing. So things have gone a lot different. They've moved a lot more. Our data dissemination program, where we used to print volumes and volumes of books about the census, and that's the only way you could find out about the census. That's what it was like in 1970. Perhaps books piled up the height of a human being. Now we've turned that in 2000 into instantaneous internet response of all that data in everybody's home virtually instantly. Big changes, particularly, I think, in the IT part of life.
Let me ask you about your career from a management perspective. You began as a computer programmer, but one day you became a manager of other computer programmers or the like. Could you tell us about your step to management, and especially dealing with highly skilled people, what that was like?
Well, you know, management was an interesting adjustment. It's one thing to be responsible for yourself and making sure that you're getting yourself, your own work done. And when you have that job, management always seems like an easy job. The manager doesn't have anything to do. He's just sitting there in the office. I found managing and trying to learn to motivate people to be a big challenge of management, to try and have them, help them figure out how to feel the same enthusiasm for a task that I did. I didn't find too much of a problem managing highly technical people. I think I've been confident myself about my own abilities. I have a master's degree. I didn't have a PhD. I tend to approach people saying, I don't really care what your degree is. I'm interested in what you know. I have found, however, that more educated people oftentimes are more knowledgeable. But I haven't really had a big issue with trying to motivate them and manage them from a technical or highly educated perspective.
How about the scale of what you're doing, especially when it grows to the 800,000 people? How do you manage such a large group?
It's a massive undertaking. You know, the census itself is a set of relatively simple tasks, but it's so huge. It's the massiveness of it. It isn't particularly hard for somebody to get a meeting together of 10 people at 2 o'clock in their office, but to get a meeting together of 150,000 people at 2 o'clock in your office suddenly changes the whole structure of things. We have a very good management team, but clearly managing something as big as the census requires a lot of interaction with a lot of people. I have about 15 direct reports during the census time, but the big thing about the census is we are spending money at just unbelievable rates during the census. 24 hours or 48 hours delay in something can cost us huge amounts of money. It's one thing to talk about a census where you say, well, you know, can I hire, I'll get something from the field. Can we hire an extra person in each one of our offices? One of the first things I had to realize is, sure, we can hire another clerk. I found out that turns out to be 521 clerks because there's 520 local census offices. So even relatively insignificant expenditures, or what seem like they're insignificant, turns into massive things in a hurry. If you decide everybody needs a PC, you're talking about 800,000 PCs. It suddenly changes the whole complexion of the day.
Well, and how about just the frequency factor? Your analogy to sports is quite interesting in that you practice every day, and in baseball you play a game every day. You only get to do this once every 10 years. How do you get a rhythm?
That's a big challenge. You really don't get a rhythm. You spend a lot of time testing and preparing to try to get everything worked out and tested as best you can. We have found that without extensive testing, even relatively simple changes in procedures can be disastrous. As an example, in Census 2000, very late in the census process, somebody had the great idea that if an individual wanted to have a questionnaire in a different language, maybe we should put a little note on our advance letter that we send to every house in the United States. in 5 or 6 different languages saying, if you're interested in a questionnaire in this language, please tear off this sticker and send it back to us. That was a change made late in the day. Everything was fine. We tested it. We thought it was great. It turned out we woke up on the morning of March 13th, 2000, realizing that every address in the United States with the labeled advanced letter on it had a leading one in front of the address. In other words, if you lived at 51 Oak Avenue, you now lived at 151 Oak Avenue. And with that big of an operation, when you make a little mistake like that, you make it really big. Fortunately for us, the post office was able to read the barcode which accompanied that address. But we came to a very near disaster of having virtually every one of our advance letters undeliverable.
And that's an interesting point, especially given the size. What are the other logistics of running the decennial census? We'll ask Jay Wade of the Census Bureau when the Business of Government Hour returns.